Monday, Monday. Morning, you alright? I hope you are. Genuinely, sincerely hope you are. Did you have a good weekend? Me? Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, it was great. Thanks. Yeah, cheers. Thanks for asking. Alright, it's just ticked past 8 in the AM, British summertime, on Monday, the 1st of June, in the year of our Lord, 2026. That's gone quick, 6 months. Just seems like just yesterday. When we did the first Bow Show, like, what was it, the 5th of January? Just yesterday, okay. Thank you. Thank you for joining me. Without you guys, it isn't a thing, is it? It wouldn't be anything if it wasn't for you guys. The glorious band, the chosen few. My band of brothers and sisters, basically the best people in the world. Tuning in live to the Bow Show, Breakfast with Bow. Hashtag the real BBC. The Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club. Don't you forget about me. Hashtag the real LBC. The Breakfast Club, with a capital T. The Breakfast Club. What are you going to do? Watch boring Mike Graham and his stale old reformtard takes? Come on, get real. All right, I'm joined by Harry, little Harry, my producer, as I am every morning. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Great. Should we just get into it, though? Why are we faffing about? What's the purpose of all this fannying about? There isn't one. Let's just get on with it. Right. We've got cancer pills. Precious gift of time. It's like some sort of new cancer cure. Well, not cure, sorry. Not cure. It just gives you more time, more than chemo, for pancreatic cancer. And I doer. My own words of I do. That Dua Lipa. Is that how you pronounce it? Harry. I don't know her music.
Yeah, it's Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
Dua Lipa. Okay. I'm aware of her. I've seen her. She's famous enough to have punctured my consciousness, but I don't know any of her music. Anyway, she's got hitched. She's got married. All right, that's the main things. Also, a bit of a Mandelson day. Tiny bit of football. Sports ball. I'll keep it to an absolute minimum. Don't worry. Little bit Mandy. Get ready for a Mandy day tomorrow, though. Tomorrow's going to be probably wall-to-wall Mandy. So, brace yourself. All right, should we get into it? The Mirror. Your slop. Some of the worst slop. Their reformed derangement syndrome. I try and like actively keep my Nigel stroke reformed derangement syndrome. I try and keep a handle on it. Like, don't lose perspective. You know, I'm a restore guy, but don't go crazy. The Mirror is mad, aren't they? All right, so the tiny bit of sports ball. Arsenal played the Champions League final on Saturday and lost to Paris Saint-Germain. Loads of riots in Paris after that. They won, and yet there was riots in Paris. We'll get to that as well. But yesterday, Sunday, was they were celebrating the winning the Premier League. Different thing. You would have thought it falls a bit flat, doesn't it? Because they would hope to have won the Champions League as well the day before, which they didn't. So it's like this massive victory parade. But actually, they're probably a bit gutted. Still winning the Premier League, no small thing. All right, that's all. That's all the sports ball, I'll say. There you go. That Dua Lipa. It's Dua Lipa. Is that how you pronounce it? Okay. She's got married to that actor dude, Callum something. Whatever his name is. Callum Turner. I looked up him. I recognised him as well. I've seen him. I've seen him in stuff. What's he been in? And I just quickly Googled his videography, his films he's been in. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not sure I've seen any of those films, so I'm getting old. I can talk to you all about history and politics, modern music and film, not so much, I'll say modern film, like the last few years, last 5-10 years, I haven't watched a great deal of films. All right, so she's getting married or got married. That's all over the front pages today. So, all right. Bit more of a normal actual story. Deadliest cancer, pancreatic cancer. I think it's most deadly in terms of not necessarily that the most people get it, but if you do get it, it's like your chances aren't good, pancreatic cancer, I believe. Like you're lucky to survive it, sort of a one. So a bad one, really bad one. All right, and it's relatively common as well. So the story is that they've got this new pill that's come out. You take it daily, and it just gives you loads more time. Like, it's better than chemo. Significantly better than chemo. I can give you 6 months more. again, apologies if I get any of this wrong, because I've never had it, and no one in my family has had this type of cancer anyway. I think if you get pancreatic cancer, not only is it quite deadly, but it's quite quick as well. For some cancer, you can just live with and manage for a long time, right? Some types of cancer, you're quite likely to get better from even nowadays. Not pancreatic cancer. So anyway, there's this new pill, and apparently it's so brilliant that when, like, the scientists, this is all in the news today, when the scientists first saw, like, the data come out of, like, research, they were in tears of joy, because it was so sort of revolutionary, groundbreaking. Again, it doesn't cure it. It just gives you more time. So there you go, the headline, precious gift of time. Game-changing, quote, game-changing pill helps double survival times for pancreatic disease. Expert says she cried after seeing data for the Holy Grail breakthrough. All right. Well, good. Good. The Express, it's a good paper. You can read your Express now. Again, Arsenal celebrating their win, but also a bit gutted for not winning the Champions League. But do Leaper there again. Getting married. Cancer hope for millions as drug double survival. So the cabal of evil Fleet Street editors have decided to go to the, with those two or three things. Yeah. Talk about pancreatic cancer and that Do Leaper lady and Arsenal. Yeah. Don't talk about Jeffrey Epstein. If you can possibly help it. Certainly don't mention Nathaniel Rothschild, the fifth Baron Rothschild. Or Ehud Barak. Or Les Wexner. Or the Israeli Intelligence Services. Okay. The Sun. Celeb Marriage of the Year. See, they've decided. This is the thing that you need to know about today. Singer and star Callum in surprise UK wedding days before Italian bash. See, this is the story. They only got, like, it was like the formal legal registering of their marriage, but they are set to go to Italy for, like, a multi-day long massive celebration. Yeah. There's your bread and circuses for the day. All right. The Daily Telegraph, the Telegraph, there they are again. All right. Reeves looks at PFI to fund new towns. A publicly funded initiative, that is. I.e. capitalism. Filthy, evil capitalism. Oh, sorry, private. Sorry, what am I talking about? Sorry. Private funded initiative. Sorry, private, not public. Very different. Completely different. Private funded. Let's get it right. Reeves looks at private funding for new towns. Blair-style private sector deals for major infrastructure work risks backlash from left. Yeah, because they hate that, don't they? I hate private businesses making money, doing business, existing. Leftists hate that. Everything should be controlled by the state. Don't worry about how that always fails. Nearly always fails. Although, having said that, when I say things like that, sometimes I see comments, and they're fair comments, saying, well, actually, isn't a mixed economy best? Well, it's a bit of both. Yeah, actually. Yeah, because to have entirely privately funded things often also isn't ideal, is it? You know, we'll have a completely privately funded, I don't know, like a train network. It gets bought out by the French or the Chinese or something, and then they run it into the ground because they don't care about Britain or something. Yeah. Have all of one or the other is not ideal, but still, the left would have it that it was entirely. Like, you think the left think that, like, bureaucrats and civil servants are better at managing things than the private sector. Not that the private sector is perfect. I just said that, right? But historically, not. When they haven't got the same incentives, the same carrots and sticks as the private sector. Look at the HS2 thing, you know. It's going to take something like... the last thing Heidi Alexander said, it might be as late as 2040, 2042 or something. It cost like over £100 billion. Like, to build a railway line from London to Birmingham was going to take 30 years and cost £100 billion. London to Birmingham, 140-mile stretch of train track. Hasn't that been mismanaged? Just throw that on the pile of examples of when government can't really manage projects properly. Right. Tories plan benefits ration cards for criminals. This is interesting, quite funny. I think this is a classic example of one of those things where when you're in opposition, you can just sort of throw things out there, throw ideas out there, just say stuff. You're never going to have, well, not for a while, or in the Tories' case, probably never, have to actually do it. So you can just say it. Right, you're in opposition. I think we should build a space elevator. Because you're never going to have to actually do it. So the Tories are saying ration cards for criminals, where criminals might get benefits and handouts. Why they should get any is beyond me, but okay. Some that do, if you're an ex-lag, an ex-criminal, and then you're also on some sort of benefits, trying to get work or whatever, the Tories want to make sure that you don't spend any of that money on alcohol and things they don't like, alcohol and gambling. So you'll actually have some sort of ration card. To me, that smacks of a policy that they know they'll have no intent. That's just red meat, isn't it? It's like, yeah, we're really tough on criminals. You're right. It's exactly the sort of policy they get into power and then just go, oh no, we've looked at it and it's not workable. Yeah, it was never workable. It was always nonsense, wasn't it? All right, there you go. Streeting, that is the Right Honourable Wes Streeting, practising homosexualist, backs fresh drilling for North Sea oil to boost economy. Well, that's not bad. Good. Yeah, abandon Red Ed Miliband's nonsense. The insane concept that there's something fundamentally evil and wrong and backward about drilling for fossil fuels. That CO2, man-made CO2, drives climate change. It doesn't. That was always a lie. 400 odd parts per million in the atmosphere, CO2. Man-made CO2 is a small fraction of that. It doesn't drive climate change. Pretending that it does so that you can increase your power and state power. That's all that is. So, okay, practicing homosexualist Streeting is against that. Well, good, that's something, isn't it? All right, first hint of Mandelson, of the Mandelson day ahead here. Keep key Mandelson files private, say police. All right, we'll get into it a bit. Well, let's not get into it now. I mean, it's some of the other headlines, but we'll get into it now. Tomorrow is the day, der Tag, when they're going to release the second tranche of Mandelson files. Why have taken so long? I don't know. They've obviously had these files ready to go for a while, but okay. Tomorrow is the day. Oh, no, sorry. Let me get it right. Sorry. Today is the day. So it won't be reported, at least on Fleet Street, until tomorrow. So tomorrow I can talk all about it in detail. But actually, sorry, today, later today is when they're releasing that tranche of files. Something like 1,000 pages of documents. But there's certain stuff we won't get. For example, Morgan McSweeney's text messages, or the investigation into when Morgan McSweeney had his phone stolen, when he lost it, very, very conveniently lost it. The details of that won't be released. Also, the actual vetting document that MI5 did, is it MI5 or MI6? The Foreign Office did. Those actual documents won't be released. But that's because the police, there's an ongoing criminal investigation into it, isn't there? And the police have said, and I think this is fair enough, if it's true, if you're prepared to take it at face value, if it's true, the police have said, don't release those yet because that might prejudice our police investigation. Well, in my opinion, fair enough. You know, at first glance, why aren't you telling us everything? Why aren't you telling us? Well, if it damages the actual criminal investigation into Peter Mandelson, then I'm for it. Make sure that goes through. Make sure that works as best as possible. If you've got any faith in the police to do it properly at all. All right, we'll still get something like 1,000 documents today, later today. So I'll be reporting on it. The papers, it'll be all over, I'm sure it'll be all over the papers. Maybe one of those days where every single front page is a Mandy front page. All right. Wonder Cancer Appeal doubles life expectancy. Okay. This guy, Robert Toombs. I know Robert Toombs, yeah. He says, France is descending into chaos. Britain can still avoid this fate. I've only read that headline, haven't read his actual article. I hope he's talking about a program of mass remigration where something like 10 million, maybe more, people need to be deported back to their countries of origin, because that is the only fix-it switch, isn't it? To avoid a sectarian nightmare. France is further down the road than us, isn't it? Oh, if you didn't know, over the weekend, I think I mentioned it right at the top of the show, didn't I? I'll mention it here again. Once, when PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, defended their title, reigning, defending, when they beat Arsenal, the Gooners, in the Champions League final, there was loads of rioting across France, not just in Paris, in apparently something like 15 different French towns and cities. Rioting, smashing stuff up, burning cars, smashing windows, loads of people arrested, 700, 800 people arrested, loads of people injured and wounded, including loads of policemen. One person died. France just went a bit berserk after they won the Champions League. Of course, it's only nominally about football, isn't it? It's actually really loads of their invaders going berserk, realising there's a slim reason to go berserk. So they do, you know, like on New Year's Eve, various other times of year. Oh, the normal native population of France are enjoying something, are celebrating something. People are out on the streets. Right, let's start burning stuff and smashing stuff up and hurting people. Largely they're African, North African and Middle Eastern populations in France. Toombs reckons Britain can avoid that. That sectarian nightmare, racial, religious, tribal, sectarian nightmare. I wonder if he talks about remigration. Obviously, deportations and remigration of all the foreign invaders we've got in the West is the answer, isn't it? All right. What else have we got? Let's see. The Guardian. Ugh. The Guardian, you're still a thing. Disgusting socialist rag. Absolute subversion from top to bottom. Weirdo freaks. Mandelson files show no mitigation of security concerns over top US job. So the thing is, oh, and the Gooners there. The Gooners. Mandelson, so even though the files aren't going to be released until later today, a fair few people have seen them, people in the know, people at the heart of power or whatever, have seen them or been briefed about them. And some of those have then leaked what they've seen, because there's always leaks. It's very, 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 very difficult to stop leakage. Very difficult in this day and age. So there's been some leakage going on, and they say that what these files reveal, among other things, among the fact that loads of people in the Labour Party just looked up to Mandelson and he was like some sort of godfather, and that you couldn't get on in the party without his blessing, and that he told ministers what their role was really and what their policy would be, all stuff like that. Beyond that, well, as this headline says, apparently it shows there's no mitigation of security concerns over top US jobs. So if you remember, we already know, don't we, for sure, as a matter of record, that the vetting process, well, wasn't even entirely complete before he was just given the job and put into post. But that vetting process did say, he has got ties to Russians, Chinese and Israelis, which are questionable. So after that, these files show that there was no mitigation of the security concerns. So people, the right people in the know, in the right place, knew there was, he had all these concerns over who he is, basically, over what he is. And nothing was really done to mitigate that, you know, to maybe keep him out of seeing the most sensitive things and stuff. No, it was just full blown. Because to be ambassador to the US, you get access to some of the most sensitive information, don't you? You're supposed to be in the loop for everything that goes on between the US and the UK. And that would include all sorts of intelligence services stuff. It's a concern, isn't it? It's a real worry. So say what Mandelson is, who he was, what he was. Well, what he was a mole, wasn't it? I'm prepared to say that. A treasonous mole on the inside, working for third-party foreign interests, wasn't he? Wasn't he? Was he not sending politically and market-sensitive information to one Jeffrey Epstein? Was he not doing that? He was doing that. Again, that's a matter of record, isn't it, now, as well? So what's that if that's not a traitor, actual traitor? Not just someone you don't like who's got policies, lefty policies, and you call them a traitor. Not that. No, an actual, full-blown traitor. Nothing was done to mitigate the concerns over that. Right. Okay. The IDF seizes strategic castle in Lebanon. It's reasonably interesting. If I can find, there was a decent picture of it. I think maybe it was on the BBC. Yeah. Let's just have a quick look at this. The Beaufort Castle. Look. That's nice, isn't it? In the normal times, that might be a nice day out to go and visit. There's like a Crusader era castle in Lebanon. Right, so probably something like an 800-year-old, maybe 900-year-old castle in Lebanon. Beaufort Castle. And the IDF, the Israeli army, have captured it. People saying it's strategically important. Well, kind of, basically, I mean, I suppose, they did build castles, didn't they? Usually, nearly always, in sort of the most strategically important, maybe even tactically important place to overlook the landscape. That was usually very deliberately the case. So, all right. And some people around the world, even like our foreign secretary, loads of different politicians have condemned it because it's like the furthest the Israeli army of their furthest incursion into Lebanon for years, like a generation, 25 years or whatever. Again, I would have loved to do a tour of castles in Syria and Lebanon. The Crack de Chevalier in Syria before this current spate, this generation's wave of warfare in that part of the world. This is exactly the sort of place I would have loved to visit, walked around really slowly, looking at loads of stuff one afternoon. Would have been nice. All right, now it's occupied by the Israeli army. All right, that's in the news a little bit this morning. Let's go back here. All right. The Times, the venerable Times, it's almost as subversive and anti-Western as all the others. Very nearly so. All right. There's that Leaper woman, Do Leaper, again. All right, she's got married. That cancer pill, daily pill that could revolutionise cancer treatment for millions. Good. Reform vote in unions at same level as Labour. This is interesting. Poll shows working class abandoning Starmer. So the story is, I read this story, the story is that among unions, workers' unions, that of course are historically Labour, pro-Labour, I mean some, a lot of them, the biggest ones, are all sort of formally affiliated to the Labour Party. Right? Labour, in the first case, in like the early 20th century, all through the 20th century, was, you know, like staunchly supposed to be, old Labour anyway, sort of a working class movement, or as it says on the tin, a Labour movement. It's funny how far they've come, isn't it? Not funny, ha ha. Funny, bizarre, how far Labour have come from that, from an original working class labour movement, labour with a small L. And now what are they? Well, they're not really, they're just so socialist that they'll wring wealth out of kulaks even. They don't seem to care about working class normal people, working people, do they? They wouldn't flood us with millions of low-skilled, low-wage foreign people, would they? If they cared about us, if they cared about working people that joined unions. They obviously don't care about that anymore, haven't for a very, 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 very long time. And so, surprise, surprise, a lot of people in unions, according to this data, according to this story, are just as likely to vote Reform than Labour. To be perfectly honest, Restore are much more likely to stand up for the interests of the working man than Reform are. But certainly Labour don't. Certainly most people, unless you're dyed-in-the-wool Labour, unless you're one of those people that have got your head in the sand and insist on voting Labour until your dying day, regardless of how much damage they do to you and your country, unless you're one of those people, a useful idiot, then you start looking somewhere else for a party that might not try and make you penniless as quickly as possible. You might not try and replace you in your one and only ancestral homeland with foreign people. So yeah, Reform vote in unions at same level as Labour. Remarkable, really. Even when I was a kid, you know, no, not many people probably would have predicted that. Well, of course, Reform didn't exist, but you know what I mean. Union people abandoning Labour on a large scale. That's what you get. If you screw over your base long enough and hard enough, they will abandon you. Eventually. Or at least a lot of them will. You're not owed anyone's vote, are you? You have to win it every election. That's the way it should be. That's the way it is. You know, Labour thought, oh, we can just always, always rely on unions. The people that are in unions. Just always rely on them to be Labour. Well, not so much anymore. Good. And it's a reckoning long overdue, is it not? All right. Red tape to be cut on home improvements. I believe it when I see it. Good idea. Good on paper. Welcome, of course. But I believe it when I see it. It's one of those things. We're going to cut red tape. We're going to leave the EU and cut loads of red tape. Didn't really. We're going to cut down on bureaucracy and red tape. But they don't. They add more, if anything. So it's one of those things. We're going to stop the small boats. Stop the boats. And then they don't. The Eye paper. Shall we read the blurb? It's usually the best thing you get on Fleet Street on any given day. Well, look, there's wee Jimmy Cranky there. Having a bit of a boo. Booing it up. And Abby Dawsey. Talk about her in a minute. Leadership rivals back revolution in UK voting system. Would be nice. Again, I wonder if it'll ever happen. Talking about first past the post or winner takes all against proportional representation. I'm a PR person. I would prefer PR. Most people do, if you look at it dispassionately. Most people do. You get the odd person like Peter Hitchens with his stupid contrarian takes. He doesn't like being called a contrarian. But that's exactly what he is. Contrarianism to the point of insanity. Contrarianism to the point where you'll pretend you back first past the post, that you think that's better. Contrarian to the point where you argue in favour of ISIS brides coming back to England. Mental, he's lost his mind. Okay, enough about bloody P. Hitch. Leadership rivals back revolution in UK voting system. Wes Streeting is expected to throw his weight behind electoral reform after Andy Burnham backs commitment to introduce proportional representation into future Labour election manifesto. Quick to say, if you might not know, like first past the post is whoever gets the biggest number of votes just wins. Whereas proportional representation is you'll have like your first choice, second choice, third choice. That system. And then the loser, the one that comes last, they get scrubbed off and their votes go over to the next people. And anyway, the net result, in a nutshell, is that you're much more likely to get different people's views, different people's candidates elected. Right, quite often, with first past the post or winner takes all, like half of the, or nearly half of the electorate don't get what they want, or never, ever get what they want. It locks out smaller parties, doesn't it, basically? Basically what it is, that's the net result of it all. You end up with the same couple of parties dominating forever. Because they'll also use the argument, oh, you can't vote for anyone else, that would split the vote, that would let the other side win. And so you're stuck with a two-party system. And if they're of the same mind, or if they're controlled by some other forces, then it's just a one-party system, in essence. It's just a uniparty. PR may well break that, or it's less likely to have, it's slightly less likely to have, like, a uniparty dominance with PR. All right. The IR paper understands that the former health secretary, practicing homosexualist Wes Streeting, supports scrapping first past the post, though he is yet to confirm his position. Shouldn't he be on the record one way or the other on that his whole career? We're waiting for Wesley Streeting to confirm whether he is pro-PR or not. Why? Why? If you've got a strong view on it, Wes, just come out and say it. In fact, you should have done years ago. Oh, but you haven't got a strong opinion on it because you're a nothing man. He's just trying to play the game of power. You're not actually a man of conviction, right? With a solid worldview and vision. Are you? Plus, who cares? You're going to lose your seat in the next election. He's almost, I would bet everything I own he loses his seat at the next general election. So it's mad that he's even in the running for a leadership position. Why would anyone back him in the PLP, in the Parliamentary Labour Party? Why would you back him? He's going to lose his seat next time. Don't do that. I don't know why I'm telling Labour what they should or shouldn't do, but that's mad. That's mad. As the main challenger to front-runner Bumham, Andy Bumham, King of the North, no Sternum Burnham, as the challenger to front-runner Andy Burnham in potential leadership contest to oust Keir Starmer and become next Prime Minister, his backing boosts chances of major overhaul of Britain's voting system. If you remember, back in the Cameron Clegg years, so what would that have been? Straight after Gordon Brown, so what, like 2010, is it? 2011? When Cameron had to enter into coalition with Nick Clegg and the Lib Dems. One of the Lib Dems' things they insisted on, in order to form a coalition at all, was that there would be a referendum on PR, which there was. But David Cameron, slippery scumbag that he is, contrived things so it was done really, really quickly. There wasn't really much of a national debate about it. It was done really, really quickly. And he, again, manipulated events so that most people didn't even really hear about it. It wasn't like the Brexit referendum. And, yeah. That was a gross thing that Cameron did there. Again, throw it on the pile of gross things David Cameron has done and said. Right, Labour support for PR is seen by the Greens as prerequisite for any pact between parties. The Greens would love a pact, wouldn't they? Where they get to, where one of their MPs gets to be a cabinet minister or something. Reform UK and Lib Dems also support change. I'm pretty sure Rupert does as well. Am I? I think Rupert does. So in other words, it's sort of really only the Tories that love first past the post, that insist that it's the better system, it's the better way of doing things. It's kind of just not. It's kind of less fair, ultimately. But it helps keep the Tories in the game. It's helped keep them in power many times. So the Tories will argue against PR with it to their dying breath, I would have thought. Everyone else. Right, Labour, especially the left of Labour, Reform and the Lib Dems and the Greens, and I think Restore, all of them are like, well, no, come on, look, PR is fairer, isn't it? All right. Said about wee Jimmy Cranky there. She went on Laura Koenigsberg yesterday morning, Sunday morning, did an interview, 20-25 minute interview. I watched it, where she just insists, double down, she didn't know anything. She was as much betrayed by Peter Morell, her ex-husband, and embezzler. I mean, he's pleaded guilty, so I can just say that without libel or anything. He stole 400 grand from the SNP. And she insists she's completely betrayed, didn't know anything about it. She's completely innocent of any wrongdoing. Don't believe it. I just don't believe it. A lot of people don't. She said, some of the things she said was believable, I'm prepared to believe. For example, she just didn't know that certain items in the house were bought with embezzled money. She said, they don't have children. They didn't go on holiday hardly ever because they were so busy. They both made half decent, pretty decent money. You know, not millionaire money, but they made decent money. And they didn't spend it on much. Like I say, didn't have holidays, didn't have kids. So the idea that he might spend three grand on a new coffee machine isn't crazy. It isn't beyond the realms of what's reasonable. I can buy that. That's fair enough. I can buy that. That he's buying a new PS3 or something. Yeah, it's totally believable on their wages. Okay. And that some of the stuff he bought for her as a gift, like a Christmas or birthday gift, like a gold pendant, a one-off thing. It's not like he bought endless jewels, endless diamonds and jewels and tiaras for her. It was like one gold pendant. Again, all right, okay, you can believe that. That was like a bit of a special gift for birthday or something. Okay, fine, all that. All right. But then he did buy a Jaguar car, and that motorhome, that 125 grand motorhome. When Laura Koenigsberg started drilling into that, started playing a bit of hardball, tried to skewer wee Jimmy Cranky on the point of her intellect. Wee Jimmy Cranky did seem to crumble a bit. The answers were a little less believable and impressive. Koenigsberg says stuff like, "So didn't you notice the giant motorhome?" She's like, "No, it was kept at his mum and dad's house." And then they're like, "Well, so did you not see? You didn't go round there?" She's like, "I did go round there, but I never saw it." And they were like, "You didn't see it? Wasn't it parked on the driveway?" And she's like, "No, it wasn't parked on the driveway. It was parked around the side or around the back. And I never actually saw it. And anyway, if I did see it, I would have assumed it was the next door neighbour's motorhome." So, again, you know when a little kid, a small child, is caught in a liar and it just throws out a number of excuses. And those excuses don't marry up with each other and stuff. It's like, well, obviously you're lying. I even saw on Twitter, someone found a picture of Peter Morell's mum and dad's house, her mother and father-in-law's house, where this motorhome was parked. And it's a really little bungalow-type place with one little driveway down the side. There's kind of no way you could park a motorhome there and not see it. It's just not believable. And then Laura Koenigsberg is all like, okay, all right. In the years leading up to 2023, when she and Peter were finally arrested, she was released without charge. Didn't like three different members of the SNP, or four, including the actual treasurer, the party treasurer themselves, didn't they resign and publicly say there's questions about the finances, SNP's finances? Why are you pretending there was no problem? You were on record throughout those couple of years, at least, on record saying there's nothing to see here. It's just the enemies of the party trying to smear us, trying to make up, trying to stoke division and just making up lies about the party. Our finances are as strong as they've ever been. There's nothing to see here. Didn't you say all of that, Nicola? And then Sturgeon's like, again, just squirming, really. No, yes, but that was to do something else. That wasn't this embezzled money. That was to do with other monies that were misspent. That was to do with something else. Which is also fair enough and reasonable. But the point is, isn't it? The overall point is that there were questions. There were question marks over it. And then she goes on to play the victim card, even though insisting she's not a victim. Oh, all sorts of women, whenever they're in a relationship with a male who does crimes, and the woman is smeared with the crimes that they did not commit. That it's not fair, it's unfair. I've had a really tough week. It's going to take me a long time to get over this. Don't care about any of that. Don't care about any of that. Now, when you sign up to be in public life, you've got to stand the scrutiny, sort of the endless, brutal scrutiny of it. That's what it is. Just having a Twitter account, you've got to deal with that. Now, I don't care about that she's had a tough week and that she feels betrayed by her husband. No. Don't care about any of that. She's having a little cry, sort of a fairly fake cry, like barely welling up. I don't believe you that you didn't know he was embezzling money. Like, there's no evidence of it, because the police probably would have gone ahead with something if there was evidence of it. Okay, you've stitched it up well enough. You're clever and savvy enough to realise if you just stick to your story, and if he just sticks to his story that you didn't know anything about it, and there's no paper trail proving you knew about it, then you can get away with it. But it doesn't stop the rest of the world from just saying, all right, fine, you almost certainly will never go to prison for it, but I don't believe you. I just simply don't believe you. It's not believable. You've never seen that camper van. Yeah, all right. Oh, we bought a onesie. I never even saw that onesie. All right, if you say so. Okay, wee Jimmy, if you say so. All right. The Daily Mail. Pure subversion slot. Worse than the Mirror and the Express and the Metro, in the sense that they pretend they're not. That's worse, isn't it? At least the Guardian's honest about what it is. A fifth column. But the Mail, no, they'll throw out some red meat, try and pretend it's patriotic or nativist in some way. Pretend it cares about the boats, the small boats and stuff. No, it hates us just like all the others. All right. Labour leadership chaos. You've not won anything yet, Andy, it warns. Andy Bumham, King of the North, with his eyeliner and his double chin. Zzz. No Sternum Burnham. A weak nothing man, a parlouring pinko, acting like he's a prime minister in waiting. There was leaks that he's got his fantasy cabinet. It's already picking out his cabinet members for when he's the leader. It would be funny if he failed to win that by-election. It would be really quite funny. Echoes of Neil Kinnock as Cocky Burnham accused of taking voters for granted. Yeah, if anyone doesn't know, Neil Kinnock, now the Lord Kinnock. Was he alive? Did he die? Now, I think Neil Kinnock's still alive. Stephen Kinnock, his son, is in politics, isn't he? If anyone doesn't remember, in like the 80s or very early 90s, or both, the 80s and the early 90s, Neil Kinnock, the then leader of the Labour Party, particularly against John Major in 1992, was it? He counted his chickens before they were hatched. He just started talking about how he's definitely going to be Prime Minister and acting like he's the government, he is the government in waiting and all that sort of thing. And then he lost. Shades of Hillary Clinton, where she thought it was a lock, didn't she? She thought it was a foregone conclusion that she'd be president. Didn't she? She thought that. Didn't she congratulate herself on her birthday just before the presidential election in 2016? Happy birthday, future female president, first lady president. Happy birthday. That aged like milk, didn't it? So anyway, Burnham's sort of beginning to count his chickens. Sheer hubris. We'll see. Maybe he'll win that by-election. And then maybe he'll win that leadership contest and become Prime Minister and form a government. Who knows? We shall see. It's definitely in the lap of the gods, isn't it? Okay, the Metro. Ooh, ooh. Ooh. Don't want. Stop. Stop it. Grow up. The Metro. Sturgeon again, another wee Jimmy Cranky. 25-foot motorhome, I didn't spot it. Yeah, it's not believable, is it? She's never seen it. That's her story. That's her story. She said something like, to my memory, I'm slightly paraphrasing, but she said something like, as far as my memory goes, I can genuinely tell you I never saw it. Never saw it. But yet she visited that house, quote, a handful of times. She said, not even a handful of times. So at least more than once. I don't know. Who knows what that means? A handful of times or less than a handful of times. What does that mean? It's a tiny little bungalow. She claims she never saw it. And even if she did see it, why would she assume that it had been bought by Peter with embezzled money? Crocodile tears, pretending she's crying. Huge holiday vehicle my husband paid for with SNP funds was parked out of sight, she insists. Difficult. If you look at that property, that's difficult to believe. All right, the FT, the Financial Times. Oh, look, there's a picture again of that Crusader-era castle in Lebanon with Israeli troops there. All right. Wall Street's bulls bet US bull, as in a bull market, bullish. You know, a bull market going up, a bear market going down. Wall Street's bulls, people betting on the market going up. Bet US stocks rally has further to go. There you go. This story is just that some, many on Wall Street think that the US economy's fundamentals are strong. All right. Not sure how they can think that when the US is in debt to the tune of, what is it, well over $30 trillion with a T. House of Cards. As is our economy. As is our economy as well. As our most Western economy is a complete house of cards. As is the Chinese economy, actually, when you look at it. Could well be a house of cards. You flick out one or two cards near the bottom. Boom. All collapses. Catastrophically. You can't really be in debt to the tune of over 30. Was it more like $35 trillion? And expect that to sort of work indefinitely. Oh, and it's still ticking up, of course. Of course. Endlessly ticking up. All right. All right. Don't say nobody warned you. Not just me. Not just me. When the US economy and British economy collapses, don't say there weren't voices warning about it. Shouldn't you cut spending and borrowing? Isn't that the prudent thing to do? No. No. We're just going to borrow endlessly and spend massively beyond our means. Oh. Oh, okay. Fair enough. I'll just move on with my life then. Tell me about Strictly Come Dancing then. Tell me about Dua Lipa's wedding then, I suppose, if you're not going to be serious and talk about real things, reality. All right, The Independent. There's the gooners, a bus full of gooners there, Harry. Bus full of them. Actually, gooners is the fans, really. But I suppose you could say it about the players as well. Ultra strength cocaine hits UK as fatality spiral. Mildly interesting stories. Story. Mildly. Lucky I'm not a druggie. Do you do cocaine? Is that your drug of choice? Be careful. At the moment, the market's flooded with super strength, 85% purity cocaine. It kills people. It's 1,279 deaths this year. Or in a year. That's a lot, isn't it? That seems a lot. If it was 279, that would be a lot. But 1,000. Undercover investigation by The Independent reveals scale of crisis. As pure crisis. Just don't do cocaine at all. Alright. Scale of crisis as pure cocaine direct from South America fuels record surge in deaths. Yeah, they said they went to the Cheltenham Festival. That's horse racing, right? The independent undercover investigative team went to the horse races and they collected samples from toilet surfaces which found that 2 out of 3 were 85% purity cocaine. I suppose where people chop up their lines of cocaine on the, what is it, on the sink, on the sideboard. And they went in there and scraped samples off of that. Gross. All right. Yeah, super strong drugs, be careful. Do you do drugs of any type? Be careful, it's not so good that it kills you. What is it? That's a relatively common thing. Even experienced drug users, like heroin, you accidentally get given a super strong version. You do the normal amount you're used to, but it's actually a massive overdose. Boom, you're dead. Sid Vicious, that happens to Sid Vicious. Sid Vicious, right? From the Sex Pistols. He was a smackhead, wasn't he? One day he was so out of his mind, he went and sent his mum to go and get some golden brown. Texture like sun. She went and got some, didn't really know what she was doing particularly or whatever, got some for him. And it was super strong. Killed him. There you go. Be careful. Or just don't do drugs. Hey kids, don't do drugs. All right, the star. Look, Goona Party, Harry. Look, it's a Goona Party. In all seriousness, there was a massive Goona Party in London yesterday. Let's get serious now. Let's talk about the giant Goona Party. Half the city of London descends into a Goona Party. All right, enough of that. All right, you get it. And look, Frank Skinner is disappointed that they might sort of stop doing the Three Lions song. You know that? Three lions on a shirt. Jewels remain still gleaming. That song, you know it, probably. Unless you're foreign or very young. Frank Skinner, this man. Again, if you're very young, might not know him. Been a staple on TV for years. A comedian. Nominally. No, he's quite funny, actually. I quite like Frank Skinner. And he did that song, didn't he, with David Baddiel? And was it The Lightning Seeds? Again, if you're... Do you know The Lightning Seeds, Harry?
No clue.
There you go. David Baddiel and Frank Skinner? Heard of either of them?
No.
Okay. You know that song? Three lions on a shirt.
Yes.
Okay, you know that. Okay, all right. So you know that. All right. So Frank Skinner says, the FA wants to ditch England anthem, save three lions, and the Star's got a campaign to keep the football coming home. All right, enough of that. That's the front pages. We're done with that. Enough silliness. Let's move on. We got a poll. It's about time to do the poll, isn't it? What's our poll take? Oh, it's gone 10-2 already. That went quickly. All right, well, you get a bumper show today, so... Don't say I'm not generous. The poll says we asked you... Oh, yeah, right. So we need to ask you about this. We had a little bit of a conversation about it in the office. And didn't come to any sort of great conclusion. So I thought we'd ask you. When Bo goes... And it's when, not if. When Bo goes on holiday, probably at the end of summer, it will probably be, what would you rather do? No breakfast with Bo... Or have another host do it. Like Dan or something. So 76% of you say you would rather another host do it. 24 say just no Bo show. Okay, that's an overwhelming win, isn't it, really, basically. So, all right, well, I'll take that on board. Absolutely. And if possible, we'll get someone else. My gut feeling is I think Dan would probably be best at it. Probably. I don't think Carl is prepared to get up early and come in every morning. He might do, but I doubt it. Maybe recruit Dan Tubb. I don't know. Maybe tomorrow's poll, we'll ask you who would you rather. In fact, if I'm off for 2 weeks, It might be 2 weeks because I think you're supposed to take 2 weeks. Where you're PAYE, I think you've got to take a chunk of 2 weeks. Got to. So, might be more than one host. Big Harry. Big Harry could do it. Big Harry would be quite good. Actually, they'll all be good. They'll all be all right, wouldn't they? Have a few days here and there of all the other ones, of all the other people. All right. Maybe get some guest people in, don't know. We'll have to organise it. It'll be later in the summer anyway. Probably after the 6 weeks holidays. Probably in September. So, it's not imminent. Don't worry, it's not imminent. All right, shall we have a look at the main website? So shall we have a look at the price of oil? We do that about this point in the show, don't we, most days? Let's have a look at the price of oil. There you go. It's gone down again a little bit. West Texas, what is that, $89 a barrel? Is that what that says? Very small for me. I think that's 89. Brent crude at 93. It's down again a little bit. Not fantastically higher than when the war in Iran started, really. Again, does that translate to how much you pay at the pump? No. All right, was there one or two other stories I thought was mildly interesting? Oh, yeah, the US and Iran have traded more kinetic weapons with each other, but still insisting a deal, there could be a deal. And there is still a ceasefire of types. And nowhere near a deal, nowhere near. Iran came out over the weekend, or was it on Friday day? Saying, no, we're nowhere near a deal, effectively. So when you see Trump or Rubio or Hegseth say, we just need a couple more days. No, it's not really happening. In fact, let me play this video here. It's just a small, quick video. And it is BBC, so it's, you know, take it or leave it. Like 1 minute 43. Let's play this because it just tells you a little bit about a deal, how close they are to a deal, like an actual full blown peace. Are you nowhere near? Let's play this. Harry, make sure the stream can actually hear it. Cheers.
They want to make a deal.
We negotiate with them and then we always have to blow them up.
We are on the cusp of ending Iran's sinister threat.
The entire country can be taken out in one night.
Are you confused about the war in Iran? If you are, it is really not your fault. Almost every day, it seems like we're on the verge of a peace deal until we're not. Both the US and Iran are still attacking each other, even though there's supposed to be a ceasefire in place to stop the fighting. And every day this goes on is another day those international tanker ships are stuck in the Strait of Hormuz, which is driving up the price we all have to pay for food, fuel, and lots of other things. So what is actually happening? Well, both America and Iran say they do want to reach a peace deal, but they simply don't agree on the really big issues. Donald Trump started this war saying it was the only way to stop Iran developing a nuclear weapon. He wants Iran to hand over all of its existing nuclear material and agree not to develop any more. While Iran wants America to lift lots of economic restrictions and hand back loads of Iranian assets that have been frozen. When you hear that a deal is really close, what that usually means is the two nations are about to agree the agenda for negotiations on the really tough issues.
We're not there yet, but we're very close. We're going to keep on working at it.
And then just to make it even more confusing, every time Donald Trump says a deal is imminent, he usually then changes his mind and says he's not actually satisfied with what the Iranians have agreed to.
I can say that we can make a good deal right now, but maybe not a great deal. And if it's not a great deal, we're not making it.
The main thing to remember is that if we do get an announcement that they have reached an agreement, that doesn't mean they have done a peace deal. It just means they're about to start the really serious negotiations to try and get to a peace deal.
Right. So, yeah, still a long way away then. And ultimately, isn't it, Iran would rather rule over a country of rubble than give up their designs on enriching uranium? Isn't that the bottom line of it all? Apart from the Straits of Hormuz and all that sort of thing. The US and Israel insist that Iran should not have weapons-grade uranium and the ability to make more. And they insist that they should. What can you do? That's an impasse, isn't it? That's just an impasse. All right. Mandy, Cuba, Wee Jimmy Cranky. All right, should we just move on this day in history? You like doing that bit? I quite like doing that bit. Shall we have a look what happened down through the centuries of note on this day, the 1st of June? All right, in the year 4000 BC, exactly. It's only an approximate date. Approximate domestication of the horse in the Eurasian steppe. In what is modern day Ukraine. This is completely plucked out of thin air. The 1st of June in the year 4000 BC was when the horse was domesticated. Okay. Nonetheless, despite sort of the kind of palpable silliness of picking an individual day when that happened, it's an important thing in history, isn't it? Of course. The horse being sort of the domestication of the horse being absolutely pivotal to the human story, human civilization, from that point onwards. Right? Until, the 19th century, news could only travel as fast as a man on a horse. Humans could only travel as fast as a man on a horse. Absolutely pivotal for warfare, all sorts of things. Right? On this day in 1215, Peking, then a city of over 1 million under the control of the Jurchen ruler, Emperor Xuanzong of the Jin, falls to the Mongols under Genghis Khan and is looted for a month. I'm going to do content all about the Mongols. That was probably the great Khan's, Genghis Khan's greatest achievement, really, wasn't it? We would have thought. Finally, actually sacking and taking Peking, as was. Okay, on this day in 1543, Flemish physician Andreas Vesalius publishes his De Humani Corpus Fabrica, on the fabric of the human body, a major step forward in understanding human anatomy. Yeah, because there was an injunction on doing autopsies, basically, for quite a lot of human history, all sorts of cultures, not just the Christian religion, all sorts of cultures were like, you don't do that. You don't, like, there's something terribly wrong about defiling a corpse. Like, no, but it's for research. It will help people if we find out how the human body works. No, it's just defiling a corpse and the gods or God doesn't like that. You can't do that. Held back human understanding and medical science for centuries, if not millennia, that way of thinking. Right, Leonardo da Vinci himself. Harry. Do you think I've got content all about the life of Leonardo da Vinci? Yeah, more than one bit of content. A few hours for me talking about Leonardo. He had to do it basically in secret a bit. That's in the 15th century. Sort of secretly do a deal with people under the table to do what is effectively a post-mortem or an autopsy on a dead body. Try and see how it works. Well, there's a reason why it was a Flemish physician, because the Flemish, the Dutch, modern day Dutch, Belgian people, they were sort of Protestant, right? Among the first and hardest line Protestants, not including some places in Germany, where they were like, no, the Catholic Church can't stop us now. There's like religious injunctions against defiling a corpse. And they were like, no, now we really want to find out how it actually works properly, scientifically. So they started doing that. For the best, wasn't it? All right. On this day in 1676, the Battle of Åland, I think that's how it's pronounced, allied Danish-Dutch forces defeat the Swedish Navy in the Baltic Sea during the Scanian War. Don't know a great deal about that, I must say. I've heard of it before, I know a bit about it, but the details, I'm afraid I can't tell you a great deal about that one. I haven't got any content on Lotuses about it. I have got content all about the Anglo-Dutch Wars of the 17th century. We had three, arguably four, mostly naval engagements with the Dutch in the 17th century. Long-form content, a few hours talking about that. But the wars between the Danish and the Dutch, or the Danish and the Dutch versus the Swedish. I'm afraid not. All right, the Boston Tea Party, classic. Got content, at least on History Bro, actually. Go to that one. On History Bro, got content. Got content all about the Revolutionary War. Yeah. All about one about Jefferson, one about Washington. Talk about the Boston Tea Party in some detail there. 1774, Boston Port Act. Following the passage of the Act, the British government orders the port of Boston closed to punish the colonists for the Boston Tea Party, where they, instead of paying the tax, threw the tea over the side, famously. It wasn't the first time something. We'd had the Stamp Act before that, where the American colonists had refused and got up in arms about the Stamp Act, but now they wanted, the Parliament, British Parliament wanted to put the duty on tea. And the Americans said, no taxation without representation. Can't we have, like, some of our people in Parliament in London, at least, surely, to at least stand up at some point and say, we don't think this is fair. And they were like, no, you can't do that. No, you're colonists. Okay, all right. By 1774, independence was, like, already in the mail, right? It was already in the pipeline, really. Although it's complicated. Lots and lots of people, including many founding fathers, still ummed and ahed and vacillated on it all the way up to 1776. Many of them, in fact. Many of the founding fathers that you would have thought were sort of staunchly for independence, right up to the last minute, was like, no, I don't think so. We should remain loyal. He's our king, isn't he? It's a very complicated story. Interesting, fascinating. Yeah, okay. Boston Tea Party. On this day in 1998, European Central Bank is founded in Brussels to define and execute the European Union's monetary policy. Brilliant. One more layer of supranational economic stranglehold. I'm not for it. I'm not for it myself. One last thing. I don't usually keep scrolling down, do I? But it was mentioned to me last night on the State of Politics stream. State of Politics. That might be worth mentioning. Famous birthdays. Quite a lot of famous birthdays. Marilyn Monroe, Morgan Freeman. The actor Brian Cox, not the physicist Brian Cox, plays Hogan in Sharp, among other things. Tom Holland, the actor Tom Holland, not the writer and historian Tom Holland. Alanis Morissette, Heidi Klum, it's their birthday today. But Marilyn Monroe, it's her centenary. Had she been alive, she would be 100 years young today. Marilyn Monroe. Instead, she OD'd because she was a very, very unhappy person. Seems like, all right, should we do the Rumble Rants and Super Chats instead then? Should we talk about that? Let me do this with my mic boom so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. All right, what have we got here? Is Global Church History going to be in at number one? Yes, he is. Brilliant. It's a good day. Today is a good day. All right, Global Church History usually gives us a couple of factoids. What have we got here? We've got, today in 794 AD, Charlemagne opened the Frankfurt Synod to deal with the adoptivist controversy. Right, that's interesting. A synod is like an ecclesiastical gathering to decide doctrine, religious doctrine and stuff. So yeah, the adoptivist controversy. That is, again, they're talking about the nature of Christ. We talked about the First Council of Nicaea before, didn't we? Centuries before that, 500 years or before that, during the age of Constantine the Great, Constantine the First, the 300s AD. And there's still controversies about it at the end of the 8th century, nearly into the 9th century. Like, was Jesus a man? Or was he, like, a divine being? Or was he God? He's actually God. Okay. The Nicene Creed says he's God, right? That the God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost, are all one and the same thing. But anyway, the adoptivist controversy was that, no, Jesus was born a man, but then when he gets baptized, you know, by John the Baptist, it's in the Gospels, isn't it? Jesus goes, as an adult, goes and gets baptized. Is it in the River Jordan, isn't it? Memory serves. Anyway, he goes and gets baptized by John the Baptist, and then the heavens open, and God says, "This is my son, and I'm happy with him." If memory serves. Sorry if I've got any of those details slightly wrong, but that's the story, isn't it? And the adoptivists said, right, now Jesus was born a man, but at that point, when he's sort of given the mandate of heaven, effectively, at that point, he becomes sort of more than a man. He's like a divine at that point. Okay, that's the controversy. And lots of people, like the Catholic Church, the orthodoxy was, no, that's completely wrong. No, he's, the Nicene Creed is that he is God. So stop talking that nonsense. They're arguing about it. I mean, some people, theologians might still argue about, do argue about that sort of stuff to this day, don't they? But okay, Charlemagne, the most powerful man in Europe, Western Europe, certainly. It was like such a thing in his age that he had to convene a synod, get all the most powerful bishops in that he could together and agree on something one way or the other. Pretty sure they agreed on orthodoxy, on like the Nicene Creed. Like, stop saying Jesus was born a man and then God adopted him as his son. Stop saying that. That's wrong. All right. The other thing Global Church History says is, on this day in 987 AD, Hugh Capet, Charlemagne's descendant, was crowned, beginning the Capetian dynasty. Yeah, that's interesting. The kings of France. In a way, they remained Capetian in a sort of kind of fairly roundabout way, all the way up to the French Revolution. Oh, and beyond, and the Bourbon Restoration. I mean, when Louis XVI, during the French Revolution times, when he's deposed as king, the revolutionaries, this is, of course, at the end of the 18th century, the revolutionaries, before they decided he needed to be guillotined, they stripped him of his crown, and he wasn't King Louis XVI anymore. He was Mr. Capet. So they called him Mr. Louis Capet. You know, like, Prince Andrew isn't Prince Andrew anymore. He's just Andrew Mountbatten. Or Saxe Coburg Gotha. Like, your normal name is a normal man. Mr. Capet. All right. So, interesting, though, the Capetian kings, the Capetian dynasty, one way or another. I mean, it's very tortured to go from the original Hugh Capet all the way through to, like, the Bourbon Restoration, like Louis the 18th, say that they're all one continuous family line. I mean, there's a few skips and jumps and oddities along the way. But all right. All right, what else have we got? For Tea and Barber. All right, Bo. Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. You all right, sir? He says, the Wes Streeting on PR is a prime example of why Blair was moaning about them all the other day. I hate agreeing with him on anything too. It's vile, really. Hope you have a good day. Oh yeah, cheers. Hope you have a good day as well. Yeah, Blair moaning about them. Blair on the right of the party, essentially. I mean, he calls himself centrist, doesn't he? Because he's not right, but he, well, okay. The left of the party have always hated it. Hated the New Labour project, the whole nine yards. All right. GWFF says, I watched Rupert Lowe MP's latest interview with Peter McCormack at the weekend. He espoused the virtues of using AI to replace large parts of the parasitic lawyer class. Fair enough. Yeah, the parasitic lawyer class does need to have its back broken. Yeah. If Rupert wants to use AI, okay. I wouldn't. But there you go. Can't agree with everything. That's the nature of having a party, isn't it? You'll never have a single leader whose all his thoughts and feelings and opinions are exactly the same as yours. It's just not going to happen. All right. Party politics. Politics is the art of the compromise. You've got to endlessly compromise. That's the nature of it. If you can't do that, politics and party politics isn't for you. You're going to have to compromise. But you're one of those people, well, no, I won't do it, then I'll just absent myself from it. Yeah, probably for the best then. The party's done one tiny thing you don't like, or they're working with one person you don't like, and you're like, right, I'm out. Well, yeah, it's not the game for you, is it then? You've got to compromise. GWFF says, again, second one, says, as partisans, it's our duty to scrutinise everything coming out from Restore's camp. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, definitely scrutinise it. Yeah. voice your opinion as well if you don't like it. You say, AI talk from Rupert is a red flag. We can train and promote our own people to streamline the Parasite class. I agree with you, GWFF. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't want to use AI very much at all, if at all. As I said before, a number of times, I think. It might be brilliant for, like, I don't know, some very specific things, like maths problems or, like, medical research and things, like very, very quickly mapping genetics or something like that. I don't know. Something that the human mind isn't really capable of doing. Okay. But, yeah, just replacing whole swathes of lawyers with AI, that doesn't sound good to me. If we've got the human capital to do it. Yeah, I agree with you there. All right. TomRat247 says, PR is for mugs and will lead to endless Europeanized electioneering. Heinleinism fixes this, all of it. Heinleinism. I mean, endless Europeanized electioneering. There's nothing wrong with electioneering in and of itself particularly. But you're saying not PR, not first past the post, but Heinleinism. Robert Heinlein, who wrote Starship Troopers. Just an all-powerful state, but not a leftist one. Okay. Whilst we are still going with the democratic model, though, if we are confined by the concept of democracy, I think PR is better than first past the post. All right. Fallen Firebird, this is last Rumble rant. Fallen Firebird says, been reading Wolfram Siemens' book on Metternich lately, and it's extraordinary. Yeah, he was an extraordinary man. I was always a pre-modern history guy, but the way modern period personalities really shine through is fascinating. Okay, yeah. So Metternich, if you don't know, sort of one of the great, what would you say, sort of foreign ministers of the early 19th century, like after Napoleon. It's like a Bismarck before Bismarck. Of a grand puppet master moving things around the chess table of Europe. Yeah, just like a Bismarck before Bismarck. Metternich. Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I know that I'm pretty sure that Apostolic Majesty, a true history genius. I'm just a history fan with a mic. That's all I am. I'm just an armchair history nerd. Nothing more than that. Never claimed to be anything more than that. Got an undergrad in ancient history. That's it. That's as far as it goes. Apostolic Majesty, an actual academic genius level dude. Pretty sure he's got lots of long form content about Metternich. So if you're interested in that, I recommend that. Someone who's done far more reading than nearly anyone, than the vast majority of people, telling you all about it. Great. A talking head, a genius talking head. Good stuff. All right, let's flip over to the YouTube ones. Let's see, it's a fair few. 20-odd, 2 dozen maybe. So I'll whip through them a bit. All right, what have we got in here? We've got Insane Europist says... So warm here, next door's kids challenged me to a water fight, so I'm watching a bit of the old Brekkie with Bo while I wait for the kettle to boil. Never missed an epoch. Outstanding work! !! Thank you. Thank you very much. Never missed an episode. Brilliant. Lovely. Can't ask for more than that. I'm proud of that body of work. There's not a single episode in there where I'm sort of cringe, like, oh, that was a bad one. Oh, I dropped the ball terribly there. They're all good, in my opinion, and some, not all, but some I think are excellent. So do consider signing up for as little as £5 a month, bronze tier membership, loadseaters.com. Hundreds of hours of me talking about history. Thank you very much for having never missed an epoch. Great stuff. All right. Namenlos says, English brothers and sisters! Join us in Stolzmonat, the German counter to Pride Month. A counter to Pride Month in Germany, okay. Pure fiery love from our, for our own culture, history and future. And that's one of two, you've said. So and much further down, there's a second one saying, no negativity, just deep pride in who we are. Stand with us, never again. Bruderkrieg, is that brother wars? No more brother wars. Yeah, great. We've absolutely, whether it's Germany or Britain, anywhere in the West, anywhere in the Anglosphere, we've got to absolutely abandon this nonsense of being ashamed or disgusted by our own history and heritage. No, no, no. Even when there are bad things, because of course there are. Of course there are. Yeah, this idea that we're guilty of the crimes of our ancestors. Abandon all of that nonsense. Be proud in what our ancestors achieved when there are good things to point to. And in our case, there are many. Yeah, and no more brother wars. Quite right. Thank you for the two super chats there. All right, Brendan Lucas says, Israeli soldiers traipsing through the same castle seen in Kingdom of Heaven. Sure, there is some symbolism there. Yeah. I mean, that castle must have been around since, well, 800 years, I would have thought, or more. Okay. Kingdom of Heaven. I never really liked the film Kingdom of Heaven. I feel like Orlando Bloom ruined it. You know when, like, the main actor has to carry the film? So the main actor in it isn't up to snuff. The whole film's a bit ruined. I feel like that. I mean, it looks great, doesn't it? Of course, the cinematography, it looks great. I just feel Orlando Bloom was just too wooden. Anyway, I'm sure I'll get people saying, no, watch the director's cut. The director's cut's amazing. They always say that. All right. Sam Jones, our team, for a decent amount of money for the Super Chat. Thank you very much for that. Says, morning, hope you and Harry are well. There was no option on the poll to say, Bo is not allowed to have a holiday. Smiling, laughing, crying face. Where are you going to go? Somewhere in England or further afield? Think little Harry should stand in. Have a fab day. Thank you. Not sure exactly where I'm going to go. I haven't been back to Italy in quite a few years. I think I'd quite like to go back to Italy. We'll see. I do advocate for having holidays in England, don't I? And I have. We'll have various breaks in England. But it's been quite a few years since I've been to Italy. It's been 6, 7, 8 years since last I was in Rome. I do like to go there from time to time. And Florence, Firenze. I do like to go to visit Florence if I can from time to time. Once every 10 years isn't too much to ask, is it? There's a load of places in Tuscany or in central Italy that I would like to visit and haven't yet, like Orvieto, some of these walled medieval towns. It's quite literally like going back in time. And of course it's set in the sort of the Apennines, in the Tuscan countryside. Absolutely beautiful. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind. Okay. What else have we got? Brendan Lucas again says, every lovey argue that every Zitian artifact and location belongs to the Islam world. It's our own fault that Israeli soldiers walk through them. It's not our fault. It's got nothing to do with us. Oh, sorry. I don't know what country you're from, Brendan Lucas. I don't know if you're American or British or whatever, but as a Brit, no, it's got nothing to do with us. The war between Israel and Lebanon, it's not our fault, any of it. I reject that, I'm afraid. Thanks for the super chat, though. The next couple are also you. You say, PR strips away ideologues and produces unified political cultures. Yeah, right. With the latter operating on what benefits them rather than what benefits others. And then you've also put, we've had PR in Scotland. Oh, so you're Scottish. Okay. I think you have said that before, actually. Now you say that. I think you have said that before. So what has Israeli troops occupying a Lebanese castle got to do with Scotland? I appreciate that you're a super fan. I really appreciate it. But I just don't see that. That it's our fault. It's not. Okay, anyway. We've had PR in Scotland for 20 years, or for 25 years. And it's just a bunch of managers with ideological hobbies who agree on trans rights and data centers. Oh, right, okay, well. It is what it is. That's not PR's fault, is it? The concept of PR, that's the people that take part in a PR system, isn't it? So if you've got people that weren't into trans rights and data centers, they'd actually have a better chance of being elected under PR than not, wouldn't they? So, okay. Oh, the next one also is Brandon Lucas, says, you are my drug of choice, Bo, and you are lethal. Thank you, sir. Drug of choice, you get addicted to Bo. It's good for what ails you, though. I can understand how you can get addicted to it. It's very Moorish, isn't it? Not lethal, though. Again, I have to disagree with you there, Brandon, on whether it's lethal. No, it's good for you. It's good for what ails you. Alright. Thanks again. I know you won't, but don't take it to heart when I disagree with you or anything. It's great. Pushback. I like pushback. I know you won't. So, good. Cool. Alright. Still got another dozen or so. 10 or more. Alright. What have we got? Oh, God, my thing just spazzed out a bit there. Can you say spazzed out? Just did. I've got to find my place again. Okay, here we are. Okay, Marcos 588 says, breakfast show with Dan and Harry. I don't know if he means little Harry or whether he wants Dan Tubb and Big Harry as a joint thing. Either way, he probably means Dan Tubb and little Harry as the producer. So, Dan, yeah. That's the first data point I've got. People want Dan. Okay, thanks for the super chat. Farouk231 says, if you have someone else do Breakfast with Bo, you should give them a special Bo soundboard with sounds like it's it's a good paper and The Guardian. Ugh. They don't asterisks. Disgust noise. The Guardian. A little soundboard, little button to press. Monday. Okay. Thundercook 2028 says, thoughts on the Crimea fuel crisis. Is there a particular fuel crisis in Crimea? I haven't read about that recently anyway. Sorry, I can't really tell you much detail on my thoughts on it. If there is a fuel crisis in the Crimea for average normal people, then that's bad. But I don't know a great deal. I haven't seen anything. I haven't been on the internet much over the weekend, a little bit, but not much. I've done my morning research, my morning reading, and I haven't seen anything about that. So, sorry, can't really give you much of a take on that. I'll try and look into it today if that's like a thing. Okay. All right. Next one. Dr. Climate Abortion. That's their name. @Dr._Climate_Abortion. Says, wait. Should be getting our Dange on Wednesday. Yeah. Dange. Wait. Okay. And a few more from Brendan Lucas in a row here. Says, the Danish-Swede war was a bit of a scandal. Yeah, I don't know quite enough about it. Did one preemptively attack the other, was it? Okay. It's in the age before Napoleon, isn't it? Oh, yeah, no, way before. Okay, way before. Okay, I don't know enough about it, I'm afraid. Brendan Lucas again says, also took a while to finish. Yeah, that said it went on for a few years, didn't it? In fact, let's just quickly scroll up. What did it say? Yeah, it goes on for something like 4 years, maybe as much as knocking 5 years. I should know more about it. It's one of those things. In fact, I will look it up and at least read the Wikipedia page, at least watch a YouTube video about it. It's one of those ones I should know. I'm going to call myself a history nerd. It's a little bit of a fan of history. It's a little bit of a dark spot for me, a little bit of a blind spot for me. So I will read up about it. Okay, Brendan Lucas again says, also happy Pride Month, Bo. He's taking the mic, innit? Happy Pride Month. When's the heterosexual month? I guess it's just all the other months, isn't it? Maybe we should say it every single month, like having an unbirthday. A very merry unbirthday Do you? Yeah, every month that isn't Pride Month, let's bang the drum that it's heterosexual month. Okay. Brendan Lucas again says, I prefer a female's interpretation of the Odyssey. Again, are you being sarcastic there? Because apparently the translation that they used for this latest adaptation of the Odyssey that's coming out was that female feminist, she's actual feminist though, wasn't she? Her translation of it. You just say, doesn't seem to be in relation to anything else, just say, you've just said, I prefer a female's interpretation of the Odyssey. Oh, well. Do you? Okay. I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not there. Okay, next one, also Brendan Lucas. There's a fair few, the next two are Brendan Lucas. I'm busy today, mate. Appreciate it, though. Appreciate them all. You said, I learned it wasn't Helen's fault and men are bad. All right, you're definitely being sarcastic. Okay, got it, yeah. Yeah, it's all men's fault. And men are bad. Men are bad. Of sure. Always. Sure. Next one, also Brendan Lucas. Kingdom of Heaven is bad because plot made up. Orlando Bloom's character in real life actually negotiated slave quota for Saladin. Really anti-Western film. Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time. I've only seen it like twice and not in a long, long time. Not since relatively soon after it came out, but some people really love it. I didn't get on with it. I didn't particularly like it. Yeah, okay. All right, Varulg 231 says, I think what the guy means by Heinleinism is restricting the vote to people who've proven willing to go through adversity to serve society. If I remember Sargon's video on Starship Troopers anyway. Oh, right, okay, no, fair enough. Yeah, what was it? Tom Rat. Okay, so you're not talking about Heinleinism in general. You're talking about the society that's in Starship Troopers. Right. Because I've read a fair bit of Heinlein. He's got loads of great books. Classics. He's not just as Starship Troopers. I've read the book Starship Troopers a couple of times. It's quite different to the film. Very different, actually. There's loads more to it. It's not just that one bug planet. There's loads more to it. But okay, in that society, yeah, you only if you serve in the army, in the military, are you allowed a vote. Right, so you've got to earn your vote. Yeah, restrict the franchise massively. Yeah, I'm certainly not for expanding the franchise, certainly not. It might be nice to restrict the franchise in some ways. Yeah, in the ancient world, it was very, very restricted. Very, very strict. When you look at some, actually relatively few, examples of ancient republics, the franchise was very, very restricted. Usually an age and property qualification. You had to be sort of almost middle-aged. Well, in your 30s, usually. You're talking about classical Athens or the Roman Republic. Usually in your 30s, at least, if not older, and have a property qualification. Are you only people that own land and houses, i.e. you've got a real stake in society, stuff like that. Maybe that's a bit far for the 21st century, but nonetheless, yeah, perhaps the franchise is too broad. All right, certainly foreign people or even dual nationals should not have a vote. I don't think if you're an actual foreign national, no way you should get a vote. 16 and 17 year olds, no thank you, no pass on that idea. It's crazy. Okay, Marcos 588 says, Bowen Furious Italian Epochs documentary when? Oh, I've had Furious Personax on. I've had him on. Yeah, we talked all about early Rome, like the kings of Rome. We talked all about, I think, the Fourth Crusade. We definitely talked all about Byzantium. Maybe it was a few couple of centuries worth of Byzantium leading up to and including the Fourth Crusade. So we've had him on. And I have him on again. Absolutely. Privileged to call him my friend. Next time he's in England and he comes over every now and again, every year or two or so, whenever he's over next, I'll get him in again. We'll make more long-form content again. He's great. He's one of those people who knows more than me. Absolutely, absolutely happy to concede that. I'll say somewhere between me and Apostolic Majesty. don't take this as a criticism, Furious, if you see this. You're not quite on AM's level. But not far off and above me. So there you go. Certainly above me. Much more knowledgeable. Very, very great, interesting history dude. We'll make more with him. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll do that. No one is on AM's level. Hardly anyone. Hardly anyone. I would say he's the most knowledgeable history content creator on the internet. I don't know of another that's close. That's close. So again, no shade, Furious. No shade. We're still good. It's still good. All right, last two now. Ridge 6264 says, did the Rothschilds annex Palestine mid-1800s, Bo? The Rothschilds annex Palestine? No. In the 1800s? It was under Ottoman rule, wasn't it? What am I... Is there some massive bit of history I don't know about? What are you talking about? It was under Ottoman rule, was it not? All right. Another one from Brenda Lucas says, I'm Scottish. Still upset about the Darien affair. Okay, the last one, Marcos. I've got to finish up here. Marcos says, no, like a full holiday doco, given he's Italian. All right, go to Italy and make a documentary with him. Yeah, maybe. Okay, all right. I've got to wrap up now because I'm recording more stuff later today. It's already 36 minutes past 9 in the AM British summertime. On the 1st of June, in the year of our Lord, 2026, you've been the glorious band that chose a few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you, it isn't a thing. Until tomorrow, do try and make the best of the day ahead. You know, carpe diem, seize the day. Your time is the most valuable thing you will ever have, and it's finite. It's finite. I don't want to get too dark, don't want to get too preachy, but try and make the best of your time if you can. All right, then, until tomorrow morning. Take care.